Welcome back in our exploration of leadership. Now, the last two sessions we've talked about change, and then we had that example of change about the penguins living in Antarctica and how change happens as we follow John Cotter's 8 steps and some other reflections on change. Well, today I want to take a shift, and you'll notice the title of this session is Building Your Team. Now, just a reminder about where we've been. You've seen this model forever and ever. A leader interacts with culture to provide a vision of a preferable future, and then provides the impetus for the prayer and the planning that is necessary in order to make that future a reality. That's the definition we've been working with, and the words to go with that as well. Well, we are in that section, the last section of a prayer and planning. How do you provide impetus for those kind of things? And that's why I wanted to talk about change a great deal, because one of the things that's going to happen as you do your strategic planning is that there's going to be change. And so we've looked at the dynamics of change. Well, today I want to talk about the fact that you have to build your team if you're going to be successful. Leadership involves doing things and doing things well, but doing things that will provide change toward a vision. As people catch a vision, as people buy into that vision, as people buy into the planning that's necessary for that vision to become reality, something happens, and that is that God usually blesses. And then the ministry begins to thrive and grow. If it's in a church setting, the church will likely begin to grow. If not grow externally with people coming in, it'll grow internally with people just experiencing a deeper type of faith. And as a result, there's going to be a greater and greater demand on you as a leader. Eventually, it's going to get to the point where you can't handle it anymore by yourself. In the United States, there's a kind of a rule of thumb that says that you can pastor a church up to about 150 people. And then you can be the jack of all trades. You can be the person who's this multi-talented person who directs the choir, who preaches, who plans worship, who teaches high school kids, who teaches adults, who provides planning for the church, all that sort of thing. You can do that up to about 150 people. But after that, you are going to need some significant key people stepping alongside you if you are going to grow beyond that. And we've talked before about the pattern that usually is followed in a new church development that will grow to about 200 and then dip and grow and dip and grow and dip because the leader has not surrounded himself with other leaders who can help move toward a bigger vision. And then the question is, if you've got to do that in order to be growingly successful in your ministry, who do you choose? I'm going to talk in the next session a little bit about John Maxwell's law of the lid, but basically it boils down to this. You and your organization will only grow to the point of the people that you have around you. You will be able to grow to their capacity. And then one of two things happens. You have to grow their capacity and your capacity for leadership and ministry, or you're going to have to get more people. Today we're going to talk about getting the more people. Where do you go to get people who are going to partner with you in a very real and a genuine relationship that will allow for the further growth of the kingdom? Who do you choose? Now, there's a variety of ways of going about that. John Wooden is well known in the United States. He was a legendary basketball coach at the University of California at Los Angeles, UCLA. He still holds the record for most championships in college basketball. And he has written books on leadership. He was sought for many years as a speaker. He was just a brilliant, brilliant leader. And so he was asked once, who do you go for? Who do you look to when you're looking for somebody who's going to help you, your team? Who do you recruit? And he said it's a simple answer. Talent, 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 in that order, is what his response was. Well, of course, you can do that. You can look for somebody talented for what you need to experience, and what you need to have done, and that's good. That's a good thing. But you can have some talented, talented people around you, and they will, in fact, mess up your ministry greatly. I've experienced that, and I'll share a little bit about that as we go on in these sessions. But for right now, I just want to point out that you've got to find a way or a system of identifying people who can come alongside you. I'm going to talk about two of them today. One has been popularized by Bill Hybels. I don't think it was original with him. But he said when he is looking for people who are going to be his key partners to move the ministry forward from here to there, he says he looks for these three things: character, competence, and chemistry. The other person we're going to look at is Patrick Lencioni. Patrick Lencioni is a consultant. He's a Christian. He's a Roman Catholic Christian who's passionate about his faith, but he's also passionate about issues of leadership. And he wrote a book not that long ago, a couple of years ago, called The Ideal Team Player, and talked about who do you look for to be the ideal team players who can help you grow your organization. So we're going to look at those two systems. He says you've got to look for somebody humble, hungry, and smart. So that's the agenda for today. So character, that's the first thing on the list. You look for people of character. Now, when Hybels talks about this, and he's written about it quite extensively, he never identifies character, except when he says, you know, when somebody's lying and stealing from you, you know you've got a character problem. When somebody is a backstabber or a gossiper, you know you've got a character problem. Other than that, he doesn't talk about it. And so if you look further and say, what does character really consist of? What are the qualities that you look for in a person of character? It can be absolutely overwhelming. In fact, Randy Fox is somebody who's done a study in this area, and here's his list of people of character. I won't even read through them all, but, you know, alertness. I know it's small for you on the PowerPoint, so I'll just read some of them. Alertness, attentiveness, availability, benevolence, boldness, cautiousness, compassion, contentment, creativity, decisiveness, deference, dependability, determination, diligence, discernment, discretion, endurance, enthusiasm, faith, flexibility, forgiveness, generosity, gentleness, gratefulness, honor, hospitality, humility, etc., 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 etc. And you say, my goodness, we're looking for Jesus here. Or at the very least, we're looking for somebody like Barnabas in the New Testament, who's that son of encouragement. So how do you choose the right person? How do you find the right person? Well, I want to highlight just a few character qualities from Randy Fox's list, ones that I have found very important in looking for people who will help me along the way. They're highlighted in red. First of all, I look for somebody who exhibits contentment. Now, what I mean by that is not that they're just always kind of even-keeled and they're never unhappy, that they're just contented where they are and they never want a raise and they never want a promotion. That's not what I mean in contentment. What I mean is I look for people who are generally happy where they are. There's a phenomenon in the church that happens here in the United States, certainly in my community, that people will go from church to church, you know. And I had that discussion with a couple not that long ago, and they had come to us, and I was interacting with them. I said, oh, what brought you to our church? And I heard this litany of unhappiness at their previous three churches. They had attended this church in the community, and they just found that, you know, there was no vision, there was no place they were going, they were unhappy with the preaching, so they went over to this church. And there they were unhappy about this thing, about the fact that they had a kid that was there and they weren't received in their youth group well. And so they went over to this church and they found that, you know, after an initial burst of enthusiasm, things were really bad. And then, you know, thank God they found us because we were finally the perfect church. Well, I can predict to you that within a year or so, they'll be gone from us and telling the story about how bad we were, because that's just the way they are. Discontented people remain discontented. They won't find the magic bullet. Well, when you're looking for staff, and if you're looking outside of the church, you've got to listen for those keys. Are the people contented where they are? You're not trying to get them out of a bad situation, but are they people who are going to come to you and be positive because they're positive where they are? I've hired some staff, and I found wonderful answers to questions in this regard. I mean, one of our staff people had gone through a really rough time in the previous church in which he was in, and yet he refused to badmouth them. He refused to criticize them. Instead, he talked about the future and what he wanted to see happen in ministry. And in his gifts in worship and leading a worship department and interacting with people, what he thought God could do. And that's the kind of person I want to hire, somebody of contentment. Dependability is another word there that's highlighted. Are they dependable? Do they show up on time? Are they somebody you can give work to and have them be responsible? We'll get to that one in a minute. Responsible in fulfilling that work. Are there people that you just say, yep, you know, that's somebody I can lean on to get something done in this team of leaders that you are creating? If somebody's not dependable, it raises large question marks. We had a seminary intern with us a while back, and lo and behold, he would just be missing meetings. And so you'd sit and talk with him about, you know, how do you keep your calendar anyway? Because we got a meeting scheduled. I expected him to be there, and he's not there. And that creates a question mark for me about his ability to have the character to live with me in ministry. Are you dependable? Are you reliable? Faith is another one. Now, here I don't necessarily mean, and neither does Randy Fox, don't mean a saving faith, you know, that they've come to Jesus Christ. But faith, meaning an understanding that God is in control, that we believe in a sovereign God, somebody who is over all and somebody who is going to bring out the best of what we bring to him in our offering of leadership in church. And so you look for somebody who's somebody of faith, that they speak about it. They speak about their desire to serve God and their belief that things are going to go in a certain positive direction. Yeah, there'll be glitches, there'll be problems along the way, but I believe that God is calling us to go forward. Those are the kind of people you look to for your team. Forgiveness. No matter how well-intentioned you are as a team, you're going to hurt each other eventually. And so you need people who are willing to say, you know, I'm not going to let this color our relationship. I'm going to forgive you. I'm going to forgive you. It's going to be difficult. Forgiveness, you know, we could spend a whole day on forgiveness, three or four lessons on forgiveness. It's a complex kind of idea, and it's a complex process. It's not a one-time thing that you just say, I forgive you. But are people committed to working together even through the tough questions? That's the idea of forgiveness there. Humility. Is it about them, or is it about the God we serve or the ministry we serve? I'll say more about that when we get to Lencioni stuff. Loyalty. Now, I don't mean, you know, they're loyal to you, sold out loyalty to you, that they'll never question any decision you make, they'll never say anything bad about you anywhere, anytime. But loyalty for me means, are there people who have demonstrated in their other places of employment, in their other experiences, have they demonstrated that they are willing to communicate honestly and forthrightly, and they're not going to go behind the back, they're not going to try to steal your position, they're not going to try to dismantle your ministry? It's devastating. I know of a pastor who came into a church, there was an existing staff there, and so he began to try to work with that staff, and lo and behold, one day the chairman of the elders came to him and said, you know what, we had three of your staff members visit our elders meeting. They called for an elders meeting, and they came, without me, they came, and they were complaining about the way some things are going. This was after that pastor had been there for about 6 months. And he was furious, of course, and he went to try to bring correction to that situation by first of all, talking with his elders about whether they should have allowed that kind of meeting. And then secondly, he met with the chairman of the elders and each of those people in order to talk about how do we relate together here as a team. Not just, oh, I'll buy anything you say, but if you've got an issue, I want you loyal enough to our relationship, loyal enough to our team, that you talk to the person instead of talking about the person. And if that's not the kind of person you're going to be, we don't need you on this team. Responsibility, I spoke about that a little bit. It's just being responsible. If you're given a task, it's fulfilled. If you're given an idea, you're going to follow through on it. And then truthfulness. If you find somebody fudging the truth, that's a character issue. That's a huge character issue. And amazingly, some people get into ministry like that. You know, they'll miss an appointment. And they'll say, oh, you know, I was stuck, my car broke down, or I was at the hospital making a call and I forgot or whatever. When the truth is, they just plain forgot. If you start seeing that sort of thing happen, if something goes awry and they aren't willing to take the responsibility for it but pass it on and spread some untruth about somebody else in your ministry, it's time to have a conversation. So that's the next question is, okay, if somebody doesn't demonstrate this kind of character, what do you do about it? If they show up not having some of those basic character traits, you don't hire them. Now, that means you're going to have to do some good legwork in finding out what they were like in their previous places of employment. You're going to have to find out who their friends were. You're going to have discussions beyond the references. In fact, I worked with a consultant once. He said, you never believe the first reference that you consult. So rather you ask that person, who else could I talk to about so-and-so? And you take their information and you go to the next person and say, you know, I know so-and-so, and I'm just looking, we're thinking of hiring him or her, and so I'm just looking for some information. Can you tell me about them? And keep on going that way until you get an accurate picture of the person. But if they come up short, if you hear someone say, you know what, they are... and one of these characteristics of character is not there, then you say, you know what, I'm not going to hire that person. I'm not going to take that risk. Now, sometimes you would raise competence above character. Heibel said, I never do that anymore. Never. Because character is so important that that has to follow competence. So, character is vitally important. You look for people of character who are going to join you. They might be people from within your church that are being raised up. They might be people that are outside, and you're looking for somebody to come in and assist you in leadership and be part of a team with you. Make sure you check out their character carefully. Next thing you look at is competence. And I put on the PowerPoint there, shoot high. In other words, when you're thinking of what you need in a person, what do you need? Do you need a worship leader? Do you need an administrator, an operations person? Do you need a youth pastor, a youth worker? Shoot for the best possible person you can get. Look at what gifts are needed for a good fulfillment of that particular job. And then go after the best, the brightest. Go after the ones who have a track record that you can say, wow, this is what I want done in my church. This is what I want done in my ministry area. And so you're looking for the possible best that you can get. Now, within a church, there's often a tendency, as somebody who works in a church, to settle. In other words, we feel like we'll never be able to get that person who's one of the top of the list. And so, we've got this person who's willing. And I just want to give you a caution there, a huge caution, because oftentimes you'll find people who just don't have the competence necessary to fulfill what you need done. Might be good people, might be nice people, but they don't have it. Now, occasionally, in a lower level position in a church, you may hire somebody who doesn't have the right experience, and maybe they don't have the right education, but they show potential. Hire that person in at a lower level, but you don't put that kind of person in a key position because it's going to take so much time and energy on your part. And when it comes to getting rid of people or firing them, it's awfully, awfully difficult in a church. Let me talk about that in a few moments. So you look for somebody competent. You shoot high. You try to get the best possible person you can get. Now, you may not get the top person. We recently did a search for a new staffing position that we had created. It was actually taking two part-time positions and combining them into what we saw as a vision for a renewed outreach and missions program. And so I was surprised at the quality of applicants that we got. And man, there were two of them that right away bubbled to the top. We had like 20 of them. We shrunk that down to about four that we were going to do interviews, on-site interviews. We did telephone interviews, etc. So we get them in. And the top person, the question always is, why would you move from where you are, near Chicago in this case, up to where we are to do ministry here when it looks like you've been incredibly successful where you are? And the references said that. They said, this guy is terrific. And so, we asked all of those kind of questions. And his answer was that, both he and his wife had parents in the area. They were getting older. And they really felt a call to relocate. And if that was going to be in ministry, that would be fine. But because they felt this call to minister to their parents, they were going to be moving to our area regardless. And so we talked with that person. And that person quickly came, bubbling to number one. We realized it would be a huge cultural shift for our staff because this guy was such a high-powered a leader, and he had experience in a church that was far larger than ours with a far different kind of culture in it, but he was going to be somebody who could take us to the next step. Well, lo and behold, He took himself out of the running after interacting with us for a while. Maintained contact with him after that. He's doing well. And continues to pray for our church, and I continue to pray for him. But the next person on the list was also incredibly, incredibly competent. A list of experience that said this person could do this extremely well. But we had some concerns. This person had been in ministry. She had been in ministry for 7 years. She left that. She went into a consulting kind of ministry where she consulted with churches and had moved down south. She herself had come from down south, was comfortable living down there. And now we are inviting her to come to Michigan to be part of our staff. And I remember we began to approach, why did you leave the church ministry? And her honesty was incredible to me. Now, this is character and competence combined. She had had an issue with the senior pastor there. And in character, she had gone to talk to the man. And they had worked out their differences. But after a while, it looked to her and to the senior pastor like, you know what, the future here for me is not bright. Women in ministry there in that church were being frowned on, and women were being limited, and she wanted a greater opportunity, and so she left. And I had the conversation with that pastor, and he just said, you know, this is a woman of character and incredible competence. Some of the stuff she's done, you know, now 6 years later, we're just incredible and are ongoing today. So you look for the most competent person you can find. Then finally, chemistry. Do they energize or deplete you? Ken Blanchard, who wrote The 1 Minute Manager and has written many leadership books and has taught on leadership extensively, said you will know within 1 minute of talking to somebody whether they're somebody you like or are they somebody who are depleting to you in energy. Now, I think that's a bit optimistic. But the reality is, this has got to be somebody you are going to work with closely. It's got to be somebody who's going to fit into your team. And so there's got to be time spent with the team and this person, but time spent with you, time spent with spouses together, if that's a relevant issue. Time spent in order to get to know one another. And is this the kind of person you like? In fact, Bill Hybels said, in one article on this, they said, after 30 years of ministry, he said he went to church every day into his job. He said he was thrilled, happy. He said, because he got to work with some of the best people, some of the most fun people around. Well, that's what you should have on your team. And so the more you can push toward that by getting people with chemistry around you, the better off you are. Now, the converse is true as well. If there is no chemistry, or you don't sense, you've got a lot of questions, you say, oh man, that person just is not like me. That's a caution flag. So you got to ask the right questions, and you've got to be somebody who's interacting with them. And it's interesting. Many years ago now, I was called into a position to be a co-pastor. In other words, there were going to be two pastors in this church, and they would share some things equally, though they would have specific responsibilities. And that was something that was a little new and a little bit unknown at that time. And so I had some questions about it. I called somebody in my denominational office, and I said, okay, you know, how many of these exist in my denomination, and how many would you say are successful? And an interesting response. He said, there are 11 of them. He said, and I would consider one of them successful. So I said, okay, what went wrong in those other 10? As well as what went right in that one. And in his opinion, there were several things, but one of the key things that I found out later as I did research on those kind of relationships was that one of the things that made co-pastorates fail was the relationship between their wives, interestingly enough. So you look for chemistry all around. Are these going to be people you want to go to work with? So that's Hybels' guideline. These are the kind of people you look for. And so you devise questions and you devise a process so that you get to know them, so you can find out their character. You do interviews with people who know them. You have conversations with them. Do they have character? Do they have competence? Have they demonstrated a track record of success in the kind of areas that you want them successful? And it doesn't have to be an exact match, like, you know, they were a youth pastor here and you're calling them to be a youth pastor, but they've demonstrated competence. Some of the people that we've hired were people who were competent in a variety of areas because they had developed skills in working with people. And that brings us to Patrick Lencioni. consultant, prolific author. Several years ago, he wrote a book called The Five Dysfunctions of a Team. And it was very popular and used by a variety of teams. And I recommend reading anything by Patrick Lencioni. He's a Christian, as I said, Roman Catholic Christian, but he is not a Christian writer. In other words, he's not writing for the Christian audience. He's writing for the business audience. And one of the things he began thinking about after talking about the five dysfunctions of a team was, okay, who is that ideal team member? You know, how do we avoid these dysfunctions? Well, you get the right people together. In fact, he developed this model. The ideal team player is the person, the one circle representing humbleness, humility, and the other hunger, and the other smarts. Now, one of my goals here always in this class is to give you some resources. And so here are some that you can put down. The first one, the top one, table group, team player assessment, ideal team player assessment, is a personal assessment that you can take to see whether you are this kind of person. And it's all online. It's free. You can take it and determine, oh, this is the kind of person I am. This may be areas where I have to work in order to be a better team member. It's a wonderful questionnaire to use with your staff when you have a team together to talk with them about how are we doing in these areas. If these are the ideal team players, how do we compare? The second one there, you'll notice, has the big title, interview questions. In other words, again, the Lencioni organization gives these away to you for free. They're interview questions that you can ask potential candidates for joining your team that will allow you to discover and explore how humble are they? How hungry are they? How smart are they? So let's look at his model for just a moment. First of all, humble. Now, this means they lack ego, but not really lack ego. I mean, anybody who's successful has an ego and they want to get ahead. But is their ego under control? Or is it all about them? Now, I speak as a recovering narcissist. One of the counselors I went to years ago said, you know, you've got some narcissistic tendencies. Now, if you're not familiar with Greek mythology, Narcissus was a beautiful young man in ancient Greece, and he was constantly looking for the perfect person but couldn't find them. Everybody fell short in his evaluation as far as their looks go. And then one day, he bends down to take a drink out of a stream, and he sees his own reflection, and he falls in love with himself. That's a narcissist. Narcissists usually have huge egos, and everything that happens is really about them. In fact, there's an old adage that says, you know, that, hey, you're just a bit player. The movie is about me. You're a bit player in life. Well, people like that don't make good team players. They are the kind of people who will try to take the credit, and they'll try to emphasize themselves rather than the team. Now, I've had to go through a period of time where I've had to try to, in the Spirit-given gift, the gifts of the Spirit, one of them is self-control, to say, you know what, I'm asking the Holy Spirit to prompt me every time that I show pride somewhere, every time where I want to take the credit. And occasionally I'll hear a voice from the Spirit that way. I think of a time when we had in worship a video and music combination presentation that was incredible. It was wonderful. And my area of responsibility, one of them, was the worship service. And so I had a team of people, musicians and other people who would plan worship together. And this one of our worship leaders came up with this idea and put it all together. Now, I could have said, yeah, you know, we've got a good thing going, and yep, you know, this is I'm the leader here. I'm the one who's responsible for it. And I heard the Spirit speak to me as soon as somebody said that when I came out of the worship service. Say, I just want to thank you for showing that. I want to thank you for the creativity of it. I want to thank you for the impact it had on my life. And I got a choice right there. And the Holy Spirit spoke to me and said, you know, this is a chance. And to be able to say, well, then you should go talk to so-and-so because they're the ones who put this together. And yes, didn't they do a marvelous job? The humble person is somebody who deflects credit to the team. You know, if we're successful, look at all of these people had a role in that success. There are people who deflect credit to God. Yeah, you know, isn't God good? And isn't his word wonderful? Isn't it marvelous? That's the kind of person who is humble. And so you look for people who are humble, and you follow his questioning technique to determine, you know, when was the last time there was a great success in your ministry, in your job? And, you know, what went into that, and what was your part in it, and how do you react to it today? All of those kind of questions will help you determine humility. So, humble. Next one is hungry. Now, not physically hungry, that's not what he's talking about. He's talking about somebody who's self-motivated, who wants to move ahead, who's passionate, who's diligent, somebody who wants to do great things, not somebody who's just kind of drifting through life and they're going to drift through life in your organization, but somebody who's passionate about accomplishing great things, and in our case, as Christians, Christian leaders, doing great things in the kingdom of God, doing great things for God's glory, doing great things for the changing of the eternal destiny of men, women, and children. That's what we're about. And so you're looking for somebody who's hungry, who wants to make a difference in the world. And so you follow his questions, and they'll give you questions that will help you determine how hungry this person is. And then the third thing that he says is the ideal team player is somebody smart. Now, he's not talking about intellectual smarts, or he's not talking about book learning. He's talking about people smarts. In other words, somebody who's interpersonally appropriate, interpersonally aware of other people around him, and is people smart as far as being able to read people, being able to read whether they are they're appropriate or not, to read whether they are hurting or not, to read whether they're depressed. Able to relate to people well, that's smart. Now, if you follow his questionnaires, you'll find all kinds of questions that have to do with that. If you're interviewing someone over a period of time, you can ask them questions. Experiences. How have they acted in the past with people? How do they interact with people that shows that, you know, they've got the smarts? They'll create scenarios, those questions, that will allow the person to speak into, oh, this is what I would do in that situation, to find out how smart they are. Now, another way to put this would be that there are people who are not just extroverts, introverts as well, but people who relate to people with a lot of common sense. Got a good counselor friend who says, you know, there's nothing common about common sense. So that's why I get paid a lot of money. But you're looking for people who demonstrate common sense in their relationships with people. Now, how do you deal with these people? How do you find them? How do you identify them? And that's the word here, get help. Get help. I realized several years ago after my first few hires, when the church I was serving got large enough that we were looking to hire further people, I realized that I did not have the capacity by myself to hire the right people. In fact, there's gifts in discernment. That's a spiritual gift. Discernment is able to determine whether something is really of God or you just sense something wrong. And, you know, I've determined that every team I get, and I always get a team together to search for a position that is open. That's been a regular practice, and it's not only me anymore, but within the church I served a variety of people at various levels. You get a team together, and one of the people on that team should be somebody with a gift in discernment. Because if you make the wrong choice, you get the wrong person, it will be incredibly painful. Now, I've done that more often than I care to admit. And it's created havoc. The worst experience was hiring somebody, and my wife, who has a gift of discernment, you know, in that process of getting together as families, leadership families with couples, you know, raised a red flag saying, this guy, you know, you're going to have difficulty, and in spite of it, went ahead and hired him, and yep, we had difficulty. 3 years later, the church, the congregation wouldn't approve the budget until we got rid of him. And that's how bad things got. Bad hires or something. So get help. If you need to, hire a consultant. Look inside the church as well as outside the church. If you're looking inside, you've got somebody already who's bought into the vision. Now, I put an example of banking. I heard a researcher talking a while back. And he described his research into what makes a department of a bank successful and what makes this department more successful than this and what happens when people shift responsibilities. And so what he said is, you know, the normal response is, you know, your bank is not doing well in the loan department, so you go to this bank who has got a terrific loan department and you hire their head person. That's the person you're after. And so you do everything you can to get that person. And you hire him, and he comes to your bank, your loan department, and you put him in charge there. Generally speaking, he said, the productivity of that department will go down for the next 5 years. Because it wasn't just his responsibility, but it was the team over here that did it. And so if you really want to be responsible, you get that team and bring them over here. But better, you raise somebody from internally in order to fulfill the part of the vision that you need done there. So these are just some ideas. You know, we could talk about this for weeks, I guess. We could talk about this in many sessions. But getting the right people around you is vitally, vitally important. Now, next session, we're going to talk about, okay, you've got these people, you've got a certain number of them, and how do you get them growing as individuals and growing in their capacity so that they are able to expand ministry in that way. So it isn't just a matter of finding the right person out there somewhere that you're hiring, but it's a matter of growing these people so that they can take on more responsibility and further the kingdom that you are growing in that way. So we'll see you next time.